He signed the divorce papers, paid support for 12 years, believed he was a father. Then DNA proves he isn't. But his ex-wife whispers a darker secret, something he's feared all along. Pay me every month or I expose your past. He's trapped between justice and personal ruin. In Georgia, laws once made paternity testing mandatory before support orders. Still, many men remain bound by deceit. This man is one of them. He must dig into a lie that shaped his life, shielding his reputation while shielding his heart. His story reaches beyond one courtroom or one marriage. It touches lessons about trust, betrayal, law, and emotional survival. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. David Mills had always believed that fatherhood wasn't just about blood. It was about the quiet nights, the bedtime stories, the scraped knees and school science fairs. For 12 years, he had poured his heart into being the best father he could be to a little girl named Emma. The first time he held her, she had barely weighed 6 pounds, swaddled in a hospital blanket with tiny fists curled beneath her chin. In that moment, his world had shifted. He was no longer just a husband. He was someone's father. Back then, he and Jessica were young, hopeful, and unstoppable. They had moved to Stockbridge, Georgia, chasing the dream of Southern charm, low mortgage payments, and weekend cookouts. He had taken a job teaching 8th grade history. She managed a real estate office and kept their modest ranch house glowing with color-coded calendars and seasonal decorations. They were married 5 years when Emma was born. She came early, too early. Jessica had insisted the doctors miscalculated the dates. David had believed her. He'd wanted to believe her. Love is blind, but in David's case, it was also willfully ignorant. 12 years later, David still made Emma's lunch every morning. He still walked her to the bus stop. She called him Dad, with the casual affection only a child who feels deeply safe can offer. It never occurred to him to question any of it. Not her laughter, not her eyes. Not even the fact that she didn't. Finishes its inquiry. He walked out of the building to whispers and stares. No one said anything to his face, but he felt it. That old feeling. The one from years ago. When people started looking at him like he was something other than a man. Something dangerous. Something shameful. His phone buzzed as he sat in the parking lot. It was Jessica. Told you. Play with fire, get burned. David stared at the screen. Then he typed one line. You better lawyer up. David sat alone in his living room, blinds closed, the light from his phone screen reflecting off his tired eyes. He'd been suspended. The school board had opened a full investigation. His old emails with Claire Grant had resurfaced, twisted out of context, painted with a fresh brush of suspicion. It didn't matter that nothing illegal happened. The court of public opinion didn't care. Parents had started whispering. The faculty had gone silent. Emma's softball coach sent him a polite message asking if he could step back for now from attending practices. He'd become radioactive. And Jessica? She was quiet, for now. But it was the kind of silence that came before a storm. Marlene, his attorney, was moving quickly. She filed an emergency motion for a temporary gag order against Jessica, citing emotional harm, blackmail, and defamation. She filed for a restraining order against further threats. The court granted it, but it was only temporary. Next steps the hearing, Marlene told him. One shot. We put everything on the table. If the judge believes you, we sever legal paternity and stop the support. but it means full exposure. The press might pick it up, and if Jessica plays dirty, which she will, Emma could end up in the middle. David's voice cracked. She's all I care about. Then you need to be ready to lose her, Marlene said softly, at least for a while. The week before the hearing, Jessica escalated. She emailed the school district an anonymous PDF attachment. Inside were selected excerpts from David's old emails, pulled out of context, designed to humiliate and imply guilt. A second email followed, this time from a burner account, to the local paper. David received a call from a reporter. They were looking into a developing situation involving a suspended teacher and an old misconduct investigation. He hung up. Then he vomited in the bathroom sink. He wasn't eating, wasn't sleeping. His hands trembled when he reached for coffee. His vision blurred at random moments. He caught himself zoning out in the shower for 10, 15 minutes at a time. Emma noticed. You okay, Dad? She asked one night at dinner. I'm fine, he lied. You don't look fine. She was staring at him like she was trying to see something behind his face. He realized then she was old enough to understand something was wrong, but not old enough to carry the weight of it. So he did what he always did. He swallowed it. The night before the hearing, he got a message from Claire Grant. Out of nowhere. Hey, I heard what's going on. I just want you to know I've never said anything bad about you. I always told the truth. I'm sorry this is happening. David stared at the message for a long time. He typed back, thank you. That means more than you know. Then he shut off his phone. The morning of the hearing, he put on his best suit. He looked in the mirror and didn't see himself. He saw a tired man, a scared man, but a man still standing. The courtroom was small. Wooden benches, a judge with reading glasses and tired eyes. Jessica was there, flanked by a private attorney who wore a $2,000 suit and a smile like a wolf. David took the stand first. He told the truth about the DNA, about the payments, about the emotional blackmail, about the emails and the mistake he made 10 years ago, and how he had spent every day since trying to be a better man. Especially for the girl he raised as his own. He spoke with trembling hands, but his voice didn't crack. Jessica's attorney painted a different picture. David was unstable, manipulative, an opportunist trying to dodge responsibility. He may not be the biological father, the attorney said, but he's the only father Emma has ever known. And now, because of pride or fear, he wants to abandon her. Jessica testified too, with crocodile tears. She told the court she was scared of him, that he was trying to destroy her life, that he had groomed a young teacher once and now wanted to erase a child to save his own skin. It was brutal and effective. The judge called for a recess. David stepped outside and sat on the courthouse steps, his hands on his knees, his whole body sagging under the weight of everything. Emma found him there. She had come with Jessica, sitting in the back with a family friend. Now she stood just a few feet away. Dad? He looked up. Are you really not my dad? The words landed like a hammer. He tried to answer, but his mouth wouldn't move. Emma sat beside him, eyes glistening. I don't care what that paper says, she whispered. You're still my dad. You always will be. He broke down. Not in front of the court. Not in front of Jessica. But here, on the steps, with the one person who mattered most. The courtroom was quiet when the judge returned. Everyone rose, then sat. David's pulse echoed in his ears. His palms were slick, resting on the edge of the table. He didn't look at Jessica. He didn't look at Emma either. Not yet. He wasn't sure he could hold himself together if he did. Judge Harrow, a man of few words and tired wisdom, shuffled through his paperwork before glancing over his glasses. "In the matter of David Mills versus Jessica Callahan," he began, "this court has reviewed all filings, testimony, and supporting documentation. What's clear is that this case is not only about law, it's about emotional obligation, about deception, and about the consequences of truth withheld." David sat still. No breath, no movement. The judge continued. "The DNA results confirm the petitioner, Mr. Mills, is not the biological father. However, the court acknowledges 12 years of parental presence. And yet, we cannot ignore that Mr. Mills was misled intentionally for the entirety of that time." Jessica shifted in her seat. The judge looked straight at her. "The court also acknowledges the inappropriate behavior and attempted intimidation initiated by Ms. Callahan. The court finds reasonable evidence of coercion and blackmail, with intent to harm Mr. Mills' reputation and career in retaliation for legal action." Jessica's face paled. "Therefore, the court is granting Mr. Mills' petition to vacate legal paternity and terminate ongoing child support obligations. This ruling is effective immediately." David exhaled sharply. The sound startled even himself. The judge raised a finger. "However, this ruling is not without moral consequence. Mr. Mills, though you were deceived, you formed a bond with this child. Your presence was formative, loving, and consistent. What you do with that from this moment forward is up to you." David nodded slowly. He felt the words settle deep in his chest. The judge stood. "This court is adjourned." The gavel struck. It was over. Jessica stormed out before he could say anything. Her attorney followed, saying nothing, not even offering a final glance. David stepped into the hallway, the silence suddenly deafening. Emma was sitting on a bench, her backpack in her lap, her legs swinging slowly back and forth. When she saw him, she stood up. He approached carefully. "You okay?" Emma nodded, but her eyes searched his face. "So, you don't have to be my dad anymore?" David swallowed. "Legally, no. But Emma..." He knelt down so they were eye level. "No law, no paper, no judge. Nothing could stop me from loving you. I didn't raise a name on a birth certificate. I raised you. And I still want to be in your life." Her lip quivered. "But Mom said..." "I know what she said," he interrupted gently. "But you get to choose who you let love you. I'm here, always." She wrapped her arms around his neck. "I still want to be your kid," she whispered. Tears welled up in his eyes as he held her. "You always will be." 2 months later, David was reinstated at work. An internal review found the emails were non-professional but not actionable. No charges, no violations. He was allowed to return with a written warning and a closed file. The media dropped the story within a week, distracted by something newer, flashier, and easier to sensationalize. Jessica tried to appeal the ruling. It was denied. Then she tried to sue for defamation. It was dismissed. In the end, she was left with her lies and her silence. David's life didn't go back to normal. It never would. But something better happened. Something real. He and Emma started therapy together, both of them unpacking 12 years of love, truth, and pain. It wasn't perfect. There were hard days, questions that had no easy answers. But they did it together. He stopped calling her my daughter and started calling her my girl. On her 13th birthday, Emma asked if they could go hiking. "Just us," she said. "No phones, no noise." They reached the top of Pine Mountain by Sunset. As they looked over the valley, wind brushing through the trees, Emma turned to him and said, I'm glad you didn't give up. He smiled, eyes damp. Me too. In the end, David learned that fatherhood is more than DNA, more than money, more than what the courts decide. It's sacrifice. It's truth. It's standing up, even when your knees shake and your heart breaks. And sometimes, it's loving a child so deeply that you're willing to burn your own world down just to protect theirs. Because love, real love, doesn't need a bloodline. It just needs you to stay. Resemble him one bit. On a rainy Wednesday in March, David was in the kitchen, pouring coffee and scanning his emails when he noticed a white envelope marked Confidential Court Notice. His hand stilled. The air felt heavier. He opened it with the precision of a man unwrapping a bomb. Inside, the letter stated in cold, clinical print, Per genetic testing ordered by the court, you are excluded as the biological father of minor child, Emma Lynn Mills. He blinked, reread, read it again, then again. A hollow rush of disbelief flooded his chest. He stood there motionless, gripping the edge of the counter. The room suddenly seemed smaller. The walls pulled closer. His mind screamed, This must be a mistake. He called Jessica. No answer. He texted, What the hell is this letter about? The typing bubble appeared, then vanished. Then came the reply, You really want to do this over text? He called again. This time she picked up. What is this? David's voice was low, strained. You knew? A pause, long enough to say everything. I always thought it was yours, she said finally. But yes, I knew it might not be. David sat on the kitchen stool like a man collapsing into himself. Who is he? He asked. Jessica didn't answer that. Instead, she said, Emma doesn't know, and she never has to. Silence. Then she added, Let's just keep things as they are, David. You don't want this to blow up. His pulse thumped in his ears. I'm not paying for a child that isn't mine. Jessica's tone changed, cold, calculated. Oh, I think you will, she said. Because if you don't, I tell them what really happened at your school 10 years ago. You remember Ms. Grant, don't you? His blood turned to ice. That was dismissed, he said quickly, but not forgotten. And I kept the emails, the ones you begged me to delete. He froze. Jessica continued, voice smooth as glass. You stop those payments, and I'll make sure your world ends. You'll lose your job, your license, and maybe Emma too. So be a good man, David. Keep paying for your daughter and your silence. The call ended. David sat in the kitchen, the letter trembling in his hand. For 12 years, he had believed a lie. And now, that lie had grown roots so deep it threatened to pull his entire life under. Outside, the rain tapped softly against the window. Inside, David Mills stared down the edge of a truth he never saw coming, knowing full well the next move could destroy him. David didn't sleep that night. He sat on the couch in the dark, staring at nothing, the DNA letter clutched in one hand and his phone in the other. Every time he closed his eyes, he saw Emma's face, her toothy grin, the way she called him Dad when he showed up to her softball games, the way she hugged him just a little tighter than usual when she thought no one was watching. She wasn't his, but in every way that mattered, she was. The next morning, his lawyer confirmed the results were legally binding. You've been named as the legal father, David. That's not always the same as biological fatherhood. I was tricked, David said. I raised a child under false pretenses. Doesn't that matter? The attorney paused. You can try to challenge the support order, But Georgia law has specific rules about timing. Once you've assumed legal parenthood and paid for years, the court may still hold you responsible, especially if it's in the child's best interest. Best interest? David repeated, stunned. And what about mine? There was no answer to that. The reality began to settle in. David had spent 12 years living a lie, and the system didn't care. He opened his laptop, desperate for answers. He typed in, "Paternity fraud, Georgia law." The stories were endless. One man had paid child support for 18 years before discovering the child wasn't his, and still had to pay until the child turned 21. Another was jailed for stopping payments, even after DNA proved he wasn't the father. "It's a silent epidemic," one article read. "Up to 4% of fathers raising children may not be biologically related, and most will never know." David leaned back, stunned. How could something this big be so hidden, so unspoken? He tried to focus on his options. There were three. Option one, he could file a petition to set aside paternity. It would trigger a hearing, but doing so would force the truth into the open. Emma would learn everything, and Jessica would unleash the blackmail. Option two, he could continue paying. Pretend nothing changed. Let Jessica keep control. A prisoner to her threats. A lie bound in cash. Option three, expose Jessica for blackmail. But that risked dragging himself through the mud. Resurrecting the Miss Grant scandal he spent a decade burying. 10 years ago, he'd been accused of an inappropriate emotional relationship with a 21-year-old substitute. The case had been dropped. No charges filed, no physical contact proven. But whispers had followed him for years. Jessica had stood by him then. But now? She had the emails, she had the leverage, and she knew exactly how to use it. His phone buzzed, a text from Jessica. "You've got until Friday to decide, but you already know what the smart choice is." He felt his stomach twist. His mind spiraled. He thought of Emma. Her birthday was coming up. She wanted a bike. She'd been saving up from her allowance. Just last weekend, she'd asked if he could take her to the store to pick it out. How do you walk away from that? How do you tell a child she's not yours? How do you admit to yourself that you lived a lie and loved every second of it? He closed his eyes. Let the guilt crash over him. The grief, the shame, the helpless rage. He wasn't just mourning the truth. He was mourning the life he thought he had. That weekend, he watched Emma play from the bleachers. She spotted him, waved, her glove too big for her hand, her braids tucked under her cap. And in that moment, David Mills forgot the DNA, the lies, the threats. For just a breath, he was dad again. But by Monday, reality returned. And with it, the first hush money payment, $1,500. Labeled on the wire transfer as child support. But they both knew what it really was. The beginning of his silence. The price of his secret. The cost of love. It started long before Emma was born. Before the mortgage. Before the wedding. Back when David Mills was still figuring out who he was. At 28, he was a first-year teacher. Fresh out of grad school. Working nights to pay student loans and trying to prove himself in a crowded school system. That year, he taught U.S. history at a small public high school in rural Georgia. The kind of place where the PTA ran everything and secrets didn't stay secrets for long. Her name was Claire Grant. She was 21, a substitute hired for a maternity leave assignment. Bright, confident, always in the teacher's lounge with a smile and an opinion. She wasn't his student, never had been. But the rumor mill didn't care. They worked on a joint civics project together. Late nights, emails, Jokes that probably shouldn't have been sent. A coffee after work. A long conversation in his car one night when her tire went flat. It never turned physical. He was sure of that. But when the administration found the emails, the conversations, the tone of his words, it didn't matter. He was suspended, then investigated. Claire claimed nothing inappropriate happened, but the school launched a review anyway. The final conclusion? Poor professional judgment. No termination, but a permanent note in his file. Jessica had stood by him back then. She was his girlfriend at the time. She had found the emails before anyone else and confronted him. "This looks bad, David. Really bad." He had sworn to her it was innocent. Emotional, maybe. But not inappropriate. Not criminal. Still, she saved the emails. All of them. Years later, after Emma was born and life moved on, David thought the whole thing was behind him. But now those same messages were a loaded gun pressed to the back of his head. And Jessica was holding the trigger. The blackmail wasn't just about money, it was control. And it came in small, cutting messages. Funny how reputations can change overnight. You remember what happened to that principal who texted a student last year? All it takes is one screenshot in the right inbox. David considered calling her bluff. But the truth was, he didn't know how far she'd go. Worse, he didn't know how much Emma had already overheard. One night, while helping her with homework, she looked up and asked, "Daddy, why don't you and Mommy like each other anymore?" He smiled, forcing the guilt down. "Some people get better at being friends than being married." Emma thought for a moment. "But we're still a family, right?" David's throat tightened. Always. That weekend, he met with a private attorney in Atlanta. Someone who had handled similar cases before. Her name was Marlene Strickland. Sharp eyes. No nonsense. "Paternity fraud's not just about science," she said after reviewing the documents. "It's about timing, intent, and jurisdiction. In Georgia, the window to dispute paternity is narrow once a support order is signed. You're past it." "But she lied to me." "She did," Marlene agreed. "And you might win a claim if you prove fraud. But if she counters with those emails, it's a toss-up. You're playing poker with your career." David leaned forward. "So what do I do?" Marlene studied him. "You fight, or you fold." That night, he drove past Jessica's new house. It was bigger than theirs had been. Fresh landscaping, a luxury car in the driveway. Her new boyfriend, some banker named Alex, walked out with a wine glass in hand. It hit David like a punch. He was paying for a child that wasn't his. For a lie that wasn't his, to a woman who had moved on, while he was still stuck in the wreckage. He sat in his car until the windows fogged from his breath. Then he made a decision. He opened his phone, scrolled to Jessica's number, and sent a message. "I want a DNA test done with Emma. Official, with the court. If I'm paying, I want clarity." Seconds later, the typing bubble appeared. "You sure about that? You want her to know you're not her father? Because if we do this in court, it all goes on record. Your scandal, my story, everything." He stared at the screen, fists clenched. Then she added, "Keep sending the money, David, or I'll burn everything down." He didn't reply. He just sat in the dark. Because deep down, he knew she would. David woke every morning now with a knot in his stomach. It wasn't just the payments or the lies. It was the knowing. The knowing that everything he'd built, his career, his fatherhood, his peace, was balanced on a single threat. A digital file. A few saved emails. A bitter woman who knew how to wound him without drawing blood. He felt it every time he walked into school. the way the other teachers smiled at him. Did they know? The way parents sometimes looked, just a little too long. Were they whispering? Even the principal, Mr. Landers, who'd always been friendly, had started keeping conversations short, clipped, polite. The walls felt closer. Even the classroom, once his refuge, felt cold now. He'd started making mistakes, grading errors, calling students by the wrong names, forgetting faculty meetings. His mind was always somewhere else, trapped in two prisons, the memory of who he used to be and the secret that could destroy him. The threats kept coming, not every day, but often enough. Don't forget your promise. Send it before the 15th. I saw your new car. Let's not get distracted. Jessica had weaponized silence. If he didn't respond in time, she'd send him a screen capture of one of the old emails. Always just one line. Always just enough to remind him how much she still held. He began to isolate himself. Stopped going to Friday drinks with the teachers. Ignored calls from his sister. Missed his friend's birthday party. He told himself he was just busy, but the truth was darker. He didn't want anyone too close. Didn't want them to see the guilt in his eyes. Didn't want them to ask, "What's wrong?" Because he didn't know how to answer without unraveling completely. He tried to find relief in the one place that still felt pure, Emma. But even that was changing. She'd started asking questions. "Why do you and Mom always text so much? Why do you look sad when you think I'm not watching? Is everything okay, Dad?" He lied every time. She was 12 now, old enough to feel tension, but not old enough to understand the minefield beneath her life. David would stand in the doorway of her room at night, watching her sleep, her chest rising and falling, her face peaceful, unaware. She had no idea that her world, her identity, was a powder keg waiting to be lit. And he couldn't protect her from it forever. One evening, after sending another $1,500 with shaking hands, David sat in his car outside the bank and cried. Not loud, not messy. Just slow, quiet tears. The kind that don't ask for attention. The kind that come from exhaustion, not emotion. He wasn't just sad. He was ashamed. And defeated. He didn't feel like a man anymore. Didn't feel like a father. Didn't feel like anything but a ghost wearing a smile. It was during one of those dark nights that he stumbled across a name online. Carnell Smith. A man who had fought and won a paternity fraud case in Georgia. Smith had started an advocacy group, helped change laws, even got invited to testify at hearings. David read his story with trembling hands. Then he read it again. He wasn't alone. There were men, thousands of them, trapped in the same invisible nightmare, loving children who weren't theirs, paying for silence they didn't. Oh, punished for trusting the wrong woman. He bookmarked the site. He wasn't ready to act yet. But for the first time in months, he felt something small inside him shift. Not hope, not yet, but maybe defiance. Days later, Jessica sent a new message. "We need to talk face to face this Saturday, alone." David stared at it. She never wanted to meet in person. What had changed? Was she bluffing again? Or was she about to escalate? He typed a reply, then deleted it. Typed again. Deleted again. Then finally sent one word. "Where?" They met in a parking lot behind a coffee shop on the edge of town. It was Saturday morning. Overcast skies. The kind of weather that presses down on you like a warning. David parked his car and waited, engine off. Window halfway down, heart pounding so hard he could feel it in his teeth. Jessica pulled up 5 minutes late, driving a sleek SUV that looked brand new. She stepped out wearing oversized sunglasses, a gray cashmere coat, and an expression as unreadable as stone. David got out of his car. Why here? No cameras, no ears, she said. This isn't a conversation I want recorded. They stood between their cars, the only sound the distant hum of traffic and the wind tugging at the trees. You said we needed to talk, David said. So talk. Jessica crossed her arms. You're thinking about fighting this. He didn't respond. You've been poking around, I know. I've got friends in the courthouse. You're talking to lawyers, reading blogs, filing drafts. You want to make this official. I want the truth, David said. I want to stop living like a hostage. She smirked. You were always dramatic. No, he said quietly. I was just stupid. Stupid enough to believe you. Stupid enough to raise a child who wasn't mine. Stupid enough to think you'd ever stop lying. Jessica's eyes narrowed. I kept your secret, David. Don't forget that. And now you're using it to bleed me dry. I'm protecting my daughter, she said flatly. She's not your leverage, he snapped. And she's not your property. Jessica stepped closer. You think you can go to court and just wave around a DNA test? Think that'll fix everything? The moment you file that petition, it becomes public record. That scandal you buried? It won't stay buried. He clenched his jaw. Let them see it. Let them read every word. She raised her brows. You really think the school board will be that forgiving a second time? David looked away. For a moment, neither of them spoke. Then she added, quieter this time. Emma will find out. She'll read it online. She'll hear it from her friends. Not just that you're not her father, but that you were a predator. That's not what I was, he said through clenched teeth. But that's how it'll read, she replied. The conversation haunted him the rest of the weekend. He couldn't sleep, couldn't eat, could barely look at Emma without his chest tightening. By Monday morning, David made another appointment with attorney Marlene Strickland. She reviewed his notes, the text messages, the timeline. She sat with the silence for a long time before finally saying, "There's a play here, but it's risky. Tell me. You file a petition, paternity challenge, include evidence of blackmail. We file a motion to seal sensitive records, especially anything about the 10-year-old case. If she leaks anything, we go after her with an emergency order and a counterclaim for extortion. Will the court believe me? If we're strategic, if we document everything, if we move fast." David shook his head slowly. What if I lose? You already are, Marlene said. That night, David began the process. He forwarded all of Jessica's texts and emails. He wrote a full affidavit, exposing everything. How he'd raised Emma, what Jessica had confessed, the threats she made, and the secret he'd been hiding for a decade. He cried while writing it, not from guilt, but from grief. He was saying goodbye to the version of himself he'd tried to protect for too long. Later that week, a thick envelope arrived at Jessica's house. It was hand-delivered by a court officer. Inside, the official notice, petition to vacate paternity and child support obligation. Jessica responded the next morning, not with a call, not with a visit, but with a bomb. David's principal called him into the office. There's been chatter, Mr. Landers said awkwardly. An anonymous tip about something from years ago. David nodded. It's true, or at least it was. We're reviewing your personnel file, the principal said. You'll be on temporary leave until the district.